Okay, thank you all for coming, and the mics are on. We're webcast, so I'm Peter Hecht. I'm the CEO at Cyclerion. There's a number of leadership team folks here with me to take questions, to answer questions as they get asked. Grateful to you all for being here during the Q&A session. We'll repeat questions that get asked to make sure that they get through. Are there any questions?
Hi. Can you talk a little bit about timing for sickle cell? So think about Alemtuzumab, and I think you said mid-year. Anything else you wanted to add on that?
Thanks very much. Chris Wright's our chief medical officer and leads our development efforts. Chris, could you take that?
Sure. Thanks for the question. I'll just repeat it for those online. How is our sickle cell program going, and is there any updates on the timing for the data? So the sickle cell program is going really quite well. We've made a lot of progress in terms of recruitment and also opening up sites ex-US, which has really made an important difference for us. And so we look forward to having the data available mid-year this year.
Great, and you just had your readout for 6463. Can you talk a little bit more about potential indications in CNS?
Sure. So the question was, we just had our readout for 6463, and could you tell us a little bit more about that and possible indications?
Go for it.
So that's correct. We're really excited about 6463 and the data that we received from our first-in-human study. And we were able to demonstrate that 6463 is well-tolerated over a range of doses, that it has once-daily PK, and it's unimpacted by food. And we also were able to show that we had exposures in the CSF that were at levels that we'd expect to see activity based on our preclinical experiments. So that's really exciting. We're currently engaging in a translational pharmacology study where we're looking at some biomarkers of CNS functioning, particularly looking at cerebral blood flow. We think that's an important area in older individuals, as well as some other biomarkers of CNS activity. And there's really a lot of ways you could go with this mechanism. It's a very novel area. It's the first sGC stimulator that we're aware of that gets into the blood brain, gets into the brain. And given its activities we've seen preclinically, so we've seen impacts on blood flow, impacts on neuroinflammation, impacts on reducing neurodegeneration, and also improvements in cognition. So we're really excited about the possibilities from the indication perspective, and we're planning some smaller studies to look at how this may impact different individual diseases. So we look forward to discussing more about those upcoming trials in the near future.
Hi, thanks. Great presentation, Peter. Have some thoughts on lots of opportunities for business development for all of you in 2020. So can you give a little more color on maybe some of the conversations you've been having or feedback you've been getting in the course of some of those conversations from last year and even kicking off this year?
Sure. Thanks for the question. And the questions about our ongoing business development efforts. We're primarily focused on praliciguat, our phase two drug that we've recently completed studies in diabetic nephropathy in. It's a very large unmet need, and our strategy from quite a while ago has been that the optimal value transfer and capability transfer point for that molecule, given the global need in diabetic kidney disease and the capabilities fit, was that with this data we would transfer that over to a global partner. And we're working very hard to get that transfer both to the best partner, but as efficiently and rapidly as possible, because we see a huge need for the medicine in the world, and given the scarcity of assets in this category, and also in heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, where this category has been validated recently by a competitor molecule, with positive outcomes data. We believe that really there's only two molecules in this category, and the right partner could customize the development program and the attributes of the ultimately of the label and the product. So we want to make sure we get it to the right partner, but we also want to do it quickly so that we're not holding up value transfer to patients. And I can't really give you details on the ongoing conversations, and have learned over time not to promise timing, but we're working diligently on it. We also have, as I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, you know, four other programs, two of which I talked about today that are in the clinic, and two very exquisitely targeted compounds. One that's about 500-fold specific to the liver, and a program to deliver a STC stimulator to the lung, and we're that's a pretty big portfolio for a small startup. It's 9 months old, so we're having conversations with a number of potential partners about how best to optimize the work we do with work that maybe get done by other partners and create some value that way as well. More of a bandwidth question.
How might the sickle cell drug that you all have fit with the sort of newly approved therapies in this space?
Thanks. That's a great question. Cheryl Gault, who's our head of strategy and commercial, can you repeat the question and take that one?
Sure. The question was the drug that we're developing, which is Alinsegrat in sickle cell disease, how's that going to fit into sort of the marketplace or competitive landscape in sickle cell? I will say it's certainly a very exciting time in the sickle cell space. You know, the approval of two new medicines is a very important advancement for patients suffering from this disease. There's been a lack of innovation in the space for a very long time. So those two new approvals represent important new medicines. They also individually treat a single symptom domain. So the way we think about the unmet need in sickle cell disease is across four key clinical domains. Those are daily symptoms, vaso-occlusive crisis, anemia, as well as end organ damage. And so when you think about the two recently approved drugs, one treats anemia and the other treats VOC. And while they have improvements in those domains, it's unlikely that they will completely solve that issue within this population. So we believe there's room for incremental improvement on both anemia and vaso-occlusive crisis. And consistent with our mechanism and work that we've done preclinically, we think this is an area where Alinsegrat could add incremental clinical value. We also believe from the work that we've done preclinically that we could push into the white space, which is the other two untouched therapeutic domains. So that would be daily symptoms as well as end organ damage. And daily symptoms is of particular interest to us. We do a lot of work engaging with patients to understand how they suffer from their disease to make sure that we're developing therapies that will serve a significant unmet need. And patients tell us that daily symptoms, even above VOC, are the things that are most bothersome to them. So that's chronic pain, fatigue, and lack of concentration. So we're excited about the possibility of Alinsegrat in sickle cell and believe it has the potential to come forward as either a standalone or an add-on therapy in this space and add incremental clinical value.
And Sean, can you just kind of expand on the importance of those patient kind of reported outcomes and thinking about the patient experience and how in sickle cell that really, you know, are you seeing that in sickle cell that's really an important kind of metric or kind of work that into the trial?
Sure. In the work that we've done...
Cheryl, can you repeat the question?
Oh, sorry. The question was just talking a little bit more about symptoms and how, from a patient perspective, how important is that really and how have we incorporated that into the design of our program. You know, I think historically people have thought about vaso-occlusive crisis as being the domain that matters the most and the domain that should be targeted for the introduction of new drugs. And it's certainly an important one. But when we talk to patients, they're expressing to us that the thing that they most want out of new therapeutics in this space are relief from daily chronic pain, which is quite debilitating, fatigue, lack of concentration, and cognitive impairment, because these are the symptoms that are holding patients back from being able to actively participate in school or work. And so that's the most urgent of the unmet needs from the patient perspective. Certainly an improvement in VOC is valuable as well, but we believe that the ability to impact symptoms is a potentially unique benefit of alinsuad and one that would be very valuable from the patient perspective. So we've incorporated that into our ongoing phase 2 trial. We'll be validating our patient-reported outcome instrument, which is a proprietary fit-for-purpose instrument that was designed by us specifically for this patient population. And that's an area where we have a lot of in-house expertise within our team. And so we're quite confident in our ability to do that effectively, to understand and translate the patient needs and also be able to work with regulatory authorities to incorporate that into late-stage development and into the label as well.
You mentioned additional work in the CNS arena beyond the IW6463, if I have that number right. Can you say any more about that additional
work? So the question was?
I should introduce you to Andy Bush, who's our head of R&D, head of the Innovation Center. Can you take that question?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
So the question was, what is a potential total portfolio of indications to be addressed with CNS permeable sGC stimulators? And I think I probably like to, you know, start with a helicopter view first, saying there are obvious large indications as well as rare indications which have an NO deficiency as a potential pathophysiological mechanism. It's very obvious that there are vascular deficiencies as a consequence of NO deficiencies, which cause a number of CNS diseases, and there are other diseases we want to address. So at this point, I just would like to say we elaborate on clinical development in two different directions, for large as well as for small diseases. And we do, at this point, also work on more on developing more than one compound. 6463 clearly is our front runner, but we do have an idea how to further specify a profile of a small molecule to address more specifically CNS diseases, small versus large, for the future.
And again, can you talk a little bit more about the Innovation Center, the model, and really how you approach R&D through that model?
Well, in my big pharma past, the question was, what could be potential benefit of the Innovation Center, and what actually is the model of the Innovation Center? I think in my pharma past, what I have experienced is very often high fences between different functions, like research and development, development and commercial and strategy. We tried to really put together at Cyclerion everything under one roof and make sure that there is absolutely an absolute seamless and aligned progression, start and progression of compounds through the value chain. And this is what my leadership team is completely committed to perform against, and I'm extremely pleased to see how really this works out, at least on our scale. This is obviously a way we can go.
Any other questions? Terrific. Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it. And you can always find us through our IR team, and we're always available directly as well. So thank you very much for the time this morning. Have a great conference.